So we've been talking about Schimmel's teaching, and earlier today David spoke about the relationship between sudden and gradual, the relationship between gradual and sudden. Both make their home in the same room, and certainly they are not opposed to or don't contradict each other, but are in a way two ways of appreciating and seeing the same thing. Reflecting on sudden, I think for all of us there are times, certainly there are times, hopefully during this retreat, this training period, this ango, this session practice period, there certainly are times when we forget ourselves in the activity of something, of doing something, and in those moments of forgetting ourselves in the activity of walking, doing kinhin, or perhaps forgetting ourselves in the activity of just sitting and breathing or eating, or perhaps forgetting ourselves in the activity of going to the bathroom, we are released from the tyranny of our minds, from the tyranny of our judgments and our endless preoccupation with how am I, how was I, how will I be, and we find a refuge. Or we find a kind of meaning that has no meaning whatsoever. My teacher Sansanim spoke in this wonderful pidgin English that in many ways was much easier to understand than some of our eloquent Dharma talks. He had a great trouble speaking English, especially in the early years when he came. That was in 1972. We took him to Harvard to try and get him educated and learn how to speak proper English. And he never really graduated from the pidgin English school, but in many ways the pidgin English school was more vivid, more straightforward, and more compelling than the language that we all have been brought up with, which is a certain eloquence and a certain polish. And I suppose we all go to sleep often with that eloquence and polish, even though it's familiar and has a certain beauty to it. So he had all of these wonderful sayings, these teachings, a big meaning is no meaning whatsoever. And when they first were said, they were incredibly compelling and seemed, they were like turning words, really, for me when I first began studying with them in the 70s. A turning word in the Zen tradition is a word that penetrates your carapace or gets through the armor or gets through your defense and lodges itself in the heart mind or in the heartland, and it touches you in some way that is inexplicable but true. You don't even exactly know what the meaning is, but there is a touch, and being touched by something that is seems completely true. So one of his expressions was a big meaning is no meaning whatsoever. And I think for all of us we have times when we awaken. Actually, we're not there to awaken, but there is some vitality or some beauty or some truth or some meaning or some aliveness, something that is clearly in a linear way, a compass setting for our lives, a moment of touching and being touched by whatever it is that we're doing. We talk at great length about the practice of silent illumination or the practice of shikantaza. One of the ways that Sansanim translated shikantaza is a very important part of the Korean lineage or silent illumination. Actually, the Korean tradition doesn't distinguish, as David was saying today, it doesn't distinguish between Rinzai and Soto. It doesn't, originally anyway, didn't make sectarian distinctions, but appreciated the fact that doubt and inquiry and wonder and questioning, usually the hallmarks of the so-called Rinzai or Linshi school, are so necessary for us to enter into our experience of this moment, a sense of wonder or a sense of curiosity, and certainly in a more vivid way, a sense of rather profound doubt or being stirred up or turned upside down. So very necessary. And this doubt or this questioning or this curiosity seems rather mild for what I think many of us experience during this retreat. Certainly I do. I find myself turned upside down and inside out, and find at times that I am, by the activity of Dharma, completely deconstructed. I feel quite thankful, actually, that I have good friends to practice with, friends who are unreasonable. Who do things for no apparent reason, and yet throw themselves or launch themselves into the practice with a great determination. So I feel incredible gratitude to be among people who allow me to enter these spaces that I often feel are not safe to enter in certain civilized company. But here in the Zendo, I feel I'm among Dharma friends, some I've known for many, many decades. Some of us go back 30 years, 20, 30 years. And others of you I don't know so well, but I'm getting to know you. And I feel like I am in good company, and I can dare to not know and to be turned upside down and to be deconstructed by the Dharma. So Sansanim had these wonderful, wonderful statements that he made that were a kind of pidgin English-like. Another one that comes to my mind now as I reflect on these early days, early 70s, when we all moved in together in this little apartment on Doyle Avenue, where I, when I was a student at Brown, had a... our motorcycle club met. That was quite an auspicious occasion for me when I first heard that this Korean monk had come to Providence to teach, and was teaching on Doyle Avenue. And I said, "Well, that's a familiar place, you know." And went that evening to the apartment. You know how it is. We have this expression Sansanim often used of without like this, become one like this, just like this. Just like this subject, just like this object. Well, I wasn't sure where the talk was, but I was determined that I would go, having been already become a Zen student and was looking for a teacher. Actually, couldn't imagine that it would be anywhere familiar. And then I started to get in the neighborhood and realized that, my goodness, the talk or the Dharma was being presented in my very neighborhood where I lived. And as I got closer to the place where I lived, I realized not only is the talk being given in a neighborhood or a place that is somewhat familiar or vaguely familiar, but it's becoming suspiciously close to some place that I intimately know. And then, of course, I was 133 Doyle Avenue, and I entered this place, which was a place that I knew intimately and had spent so much time, and that began this long career as a lifer in the Zen army. Another one of Sansanim's wonderful expressions was, "If you don't make anything, you will get everything." And of course, we all have interpretations about what Dharma teachings mean, and I suppose we all have secret interpretations that perhaps we know what they mean. What they're really trying to say is something I'm familiar with. So my translation of "if you don't make anything, you will get everything" was, I will get all of the good stuff that I dream will affirm me as a person who's in the know and kind of a smooth guy. Of course, what he really meant was that if you don't make anything, or you don't hold your opinion, or you don't fixate your mind, and you're willing to enter the spaces and energies and movements of life without your fixed position or without the judgment and opinion, you will then be intimate, or you will touch to all kinds of things. Little did I know, he really, really meant everything. So Shikan Taza, or silent illumination, as it was interpreted to me in those early days was to slow down. She is the practice of slowing down, or of letting go, or of settling. Sometimes we say allowing the self to settle into itself, or allow the mind to become calm, and allow the mind to become still enough to show up. So she means to slow down, or to pause, or to settle into a dynamic stillness, or to settle like a dust on a dirt road after a car has gone by. So she is to return, or to let go, or to settle, or to let self settle deeply into a space of silence, and a space that when we find ourselves there has no inside or outside, and a space that is to some is a timeless space. I think this one way of appreciating sudden awakening is not a sudden or abrupt, but sudden in the sense that there can be, or can there be, I suppose we should always present the teachings not as a lecture or as a I know something you don't know, but more in the spirit of a very deep, relentless and radical and sometimes ruthless inquiry into what it is that's going on. But to settle, we find ourselves in a space of a timeless space. And in that timeless space, there is a kind of innocence, isn't there? Or a kind of openness, or a kind of guilelessness, and also a kind of great vulnerability. In the Hekigan Roku, they speak about being a yawning clam, a clam that has opened its shell and yawns in a space that is not a place of planning or a place of going or getting, but a place where the tyranny of thought is at least temporarily suspended or transcended. Of course, thinking is a wonderful, wonderful thing. And certainly thinking also can be thoughts and a creative imagination can be a dharma door into something vast and inexpressibly beautiful. But I think there also is the real necessity and importance of our really going deeply within. We talk about retracing the radiance or shining the light within in the Soto school, talk about taking the backward step, but slowing down and shining the light within and going upstream to the headwaters, or upstream to the source world, upstream to a place of interior, an interior place that has no outside. So we are encouraged in our practice to cultivate the what we might call the condition of dhyana or chan. Chan is our, in a way, our way, our practice of silent, deep, grounded, rooted meditation. And hopefully, for all of us, we will cultivate as Chinul's school was named. We will cultivate samadhi. Samadhi is a mind that is absorbed, that is absorbed in the activity of the moment and that has forgotten anything outside. Lots of different kinds of samadhi, certainly, but here on our cushion we cultivate an unconditional samadhi, a samadhi of deep wonder and questioning, shining the light within. And as we shine the light within and we settle and we become deeply silent, we enter the homeland, the heartland of practice, the samadhi of not knowing, the samadhi which is before thinking, the samadhi which is clear like space. What is clear like space? Then that mind has this wonderful innate capacity which needs no cultivation which at all, that mind which cannot be brought about, cannot be muscled, cannot be coerced, cannot be seduced in any way. Simply a deep, a silent, open mind that has the capacity innately to know and to appreciate whatever it is that appears in front of its in front of it or as it. So we say she or shikantaza to return to that still samadhi of not knowing, which is before before thought and before planning and before scheming and before this tyranny of our I am self that wants to control everything. It wants to order everything according to its own position and avoids anything that doesn't quite smell right. I like people with straight noses. I don't care for people with crooked noses, so forth and so on. So we settle into a place of quiet, of deep stillness, which is before thought. And in that she kan, there is the natural arising or the natural blossoming of kan. Kan can be translated in so many ways. In the Korean tradition, the word is kwan. We say kwan zeum bosal, that one who perceives the sounds of the world, or that one who has the capacity to know something, anything really, or to be, we might say, be intimate with no in the way where there is no need to know anymore. You hopefully we all love something or someone, and we all wish to act in service of that which we love and care about. We want to order our lives around something that is profoundly meaningful and important to us by our own experience. We want to order our lives around that. Why do we want to order around our lives around that which we love or care about by our own experience? Well, in that state of kwan, in that state of forgetfulness, in that state of not knowing, we are most resourceful. We are most creative. We are most powerful. And we have the innate capacity to be ourselves most completely. And in those places, we bump into something. I don't know what we bump into in our lives, but we all have bumped into something or we wouldn't have been here. When I say bump into, I don't mean bump into as an object, but I mean shikan ta. Ta means so many translations for ta. It might be something, it might be a touching and a being touched by something. A touching and being touched by something that needs no explanation whatsoever, and it is true in and of itself and for itself. And it also is beautiful because it needs no explanation. It requires no understanding. You look into someone's eyes who you love and cherish profoundly, and they return the gaze. Life recognizes itself. Life sees itself. Life takes joy in itself. Life knows itself. And in that knowing, or that kan, or that kwan, or that perception, there's no need to be a smarty pants. There's no need to know anything at all. Why? Because in the whole universe, there is nothing outside of that touch, outside of that a bird song. Certainly from the perspective of mind and for all the machinations of our mind, that bird song appears outside in the frozen tree. But from the perspective of Shikan, that bird sings out of our heart of hearts. And each one of us in those moments, whether it be a bird song or a sip of or a cup of coffee or whatever it may be, knows why the bird sings. We resolve the koan. How do you manifest one true nature when listening to the sound of a bird? So Quan is this innate capacity we have to know, and that knowing is not an antiseptic knowing. It's not a sterile knowing, as we all have experienced. It is a know that is filled with, it's a knowing that is filled with a raksu dark with tears, because it's a knowing that's filled with warmth and appreciation, at the very least, and at the most, of enormous gratitude and love. So Shikan, silent illumination, means to pause or to slow down. You say, maybe slow it down a little bit. Maybe cut that in half and slow it down a little more. And maybe cut that in half and slow it down a little more until that silence or that slowness is not slow as compared to fast, or silent as compared to noisy, but a different kind of space, a different place. So there we say Shikan, pause and settle and know and appreciate, and to touch and be touched by something. So this is our practice, isn't it? This is our way, and when we touch to this, it's a timeless touching, in a sense, a sudden touching. We are sometimes surprised. Many times people come for sansen or for interviews, and it's right there, and they're so used to being in such a hurry that they don't even notice that there's something happening, something so simple and so straightforward and so obvious. The elusive obvious is happening. So Shikan Ta, slow down, and touch and be touched by something. And Za is a posture. Posture is so revered in Zen, not as something rigid, but more as a body within the body, or an embodiment, or a enactment, we could say. So Sansanim in the early days said, don't make anything, and you will get more and more, and that more that you get will be transformed from a liability and your problem to your wonderful, bright resource. That was Soen's, one of his core teaching in the early days when he came to this country, this wonderful, wonderful guy who influenced so many of us. He said again and again, what a remarkable thing. Your miserable karma becomes your wonderful dharma. That which you were so convinced from the mind of checking and judgment and evaluation and right and wrong, and this means I'm good, and this means I'm a failure, and this means this, and this means that, endless, becomes your wonderful, bright dharma all the time. So we are cultivating and appreciating what Chinil taught so many centuries ago, 12th century. He left the conventional life for a life of practice. He left the life of trying to be someone famous for a small group of people just like us, who were determined to be with what was going on and to sit upright in the midst of the aliveness of this moment as the way, as the enlightened way. And he renounced a world of a certain conventional world, and founded this school, which we are greatly indebted to him for. And he called the school the Samadhi Prajna School. And the teaching in the Zen tradition is that the content of knowing, or quan, or understanding, an understanding that needs no thought, or a knowing that is so intimate there's no need to check or judge, the content of that, a mind of wisdom, we could say, or prajna, or understanding, is samadhi. And samadhi is a mind that is not a moving mind. We say fudo myo, not a rigid, not moving mind, but a bright, a dynamic, a clear mind. So we honor this wonderful, wonderful tradition in our practice together, and we head in the direction quite courageously. And we trust that if we are willing to sit upright in the midst of the aliveness of this moment, that it will reveal something to us. And what is revealed is something of immense value and immense beauty. And at least for the time being, resolves the question completely. Where did I come from? What in the world am I doing in this human world of such mischief? And where am I going? Bye.
So I invite you to sit comfortably, and we'll have our Dharma dialogue, which is the opportunity to ask questions, to name what's coming up for you in your experience and to these words. And Melissa, would you call on people? Because I can't.
Well, you can't see.
Yet.
Sure, I will call on people.
All right.
All you have to do is raise your hand. I'll see.
Also, proclamations are welcome. Complaints are welcome. Total confusion is welcome. And also, I just can't take it anymore is welcome.
Yes.
So, I just want to share my happiness hearing you teach, and in this moment say that I have feel so much joy.
Yeah. Me too. I want actually on that note of welcome to all kinds of experiences. One of the things that I so appreciate about you guys, your community, and you guys have a remarkable and a unique community. Having been kicking around these last 45 years in all of these Zen places, and one of the things that has been so important to me, and actually quite a revelation, and even though we all say Zen mind is everyday mind, is that this really is when I come here and hang out with my dear, dear, wonderful friends, David and Melissa and all you guys, is that it really is, you really mean it's a come-as-you-are party. and come-as-you-are is really welcome. And that's a most, most wonderful thing, you know, that it's really a welcome, a joyful thing. So thank you guys for that.
I just want to say thanks. That was a really great talk. Having a slightly deviated septum. I noticed it on your way.
Crooked nose.
Is it got a crooked nose?
Oh, crooked nose. A deviated septum. You know, Derek, I had a bulldog that I loved. Her name was Eschen. She had one of, I don't know what you would call it. It wasn't a proper nose.
I'll have to look it up.
Yeah. She was a great friend.
But you just pulled that out of the air, right? You really like people with crooked noses, don't you? Say yes.
Oh, yes.
I hope this is not impertinent, but it was so interesting to hear of your early contact
Oh, yeah.
with Sian, would you be willing to say how you first came into contact
with him? Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Actually, I started sitting in the late 60s at the San Francisco Zen Center when Suzuki Roshi was alive, mm-hmm. but was quite sick. And when I realized that he was dying, I thought, a Westerner can't possibly teach Zen. That was my mind at the time. So I went back to college at Brown, and there was a notice that this Korean monk was in town. And I was looking for a community, mm-hmm. looking for a teacher. And I really wanted to be in at the ground level. I wanted to be in the, you know, the ragged, raw beginnings where nobody, we all were just a band of. So it really appealed to me. And he appealed to me because he left a world of where he was extraordinarily well-known and famous, and came to this country and was fixing washing machines when I met him and knew nothing, no money, no English, nothing. And Leo Pruden, a guy at Brown who was a Buddhist professor, sort of sponsored him, got him this funky little apartment and put up a poster and said, there's this monk in town. So I went and bought the farm. He was a pretty compelling guy. I mean, he was really a compelling guy. Really believed in himself, in all of its ramifications, from the self that's before thinking to his totally idiosyncratic, wacky personality. So that was... I had a long love of I'd been an anthropologist and studied shamanism and psychology of religion, so it's all, you know, and all of those things, sort of how they do, you know, they all come together in those moments and you fall in love and get married and then and then live it out, you know, through the peaks and valleys, you know, which we did for 20 years together. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks. Committed relationships are not what you think they are when you get started. So it was like, you know, you will get everything and you think it'll be bliss and happiness for the next, but of course it's everything.
I really appreciated hearing your just kind of breakdown of the different components and meanings of Shikun Taza. Mm-hmm. And I'd never... kind of heard it described in those ways, or just the meanings of the different words, and just found that to be really just rich and very meaningful, especially the before thought, and just the different elements really just kind of struck accordingly.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
For that.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I think also just a kind of a reminder for me that sometimes I'll think of Shikun Taza as, you know, just sitting. It's just sitting and seeing what comes up, which it is, but there's also a lot of history behind different kind of words and
it's all about,
it's very a lot.
that just includes a lot of just.
Yeah.
A lot of justice, justness, just this, yeah, yeah. Yeah, so yeah, it's one of, right.
Thank you. I really think that you that would be optical. Maybe you get married. That's an obstacle to your growth, your spiritual growth.
Well, you know, marriage an obstacle to spiritual growth?
Oh.
And I think
Zen masters don't get married, right?
Huh?
The Zen masters don't get married, right?
No. Most of them actually. Some that I've known actually. Sansanin was unusual. He actually took the 250. Precepts, but most get married, and I think it's really true that relationship, well, it's all a mando, isn't it, our practice, it's all a relational practice, but I think relationship is, committed relationship is unparalleled mirror. I mean, if you want to get to know yourself, you think you're enlightened. You think you have no opinion.
Right down the middle. Huh?
Right, right, yeah. And
I don't want anybody right now,
It's good to know for yourself. Yeah. Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thank you all.
Thank you guys.
Yeah.